Man, fourth quarter's coming. I'm getting jazzed. Hope you are too. Got some inventory in. Getting ready to send some more. If you've been thinking about growing your business next year, what are you going to invest in? If you don't have a plan, that's a problem. Start making a plan for next year. I know it's getting busy and you got hot and heavy. Plan, plan, plan. I always think of Dan Miller. He always says in November, he comes out with a plan for the following year and he gets rid of some of the stuff he's doing. Well, private label, if you've been thinking about it, Andy's retreat is upcoming in October. And, you know, if you want somebody standing over your shoulder explaining why what you think is a great idea isn't in the Amazon selling world because, and knowing the real reason, so then you'll have that light bulb moment, this is the kind of event that you might want to consider. So it's expensive. However, it's complete. Literally, you get there. Once you get there, everything is covered. And that's why there's a cost, right? And so you're going to be with a whole bunch of other people that are thinking the same way, that want to grow, that want to learn together. You're going to make relationships you never thought possible, maybe some partnerships, but it's such a great event. If you're interested in it, amazingfreedom.com/retreat, or just private message me and I can forward the information to you, as some people have been asking for. Second sponsor of this show is Seller Labs and Scope. You know, if you heard my examples in the last couple episodes where I was using it for wholesale and then for private label, you know, one of the coolest things about Scope is you can look at a great successful listing and use Scope and you can actually see the keywords that you're using. That's how you learn, right? Now think about that. You actually get to see a successful listing that's working, and then you get to see behind the scenes why. Right? It's a great product and all the pictures are great and all the rest of that jazz, but keywords are critical. How does it get found? And Scope will teach you that. And it's such a great tool. Seller Labs puts it out, so you know it's made well. So it's sellerlabs.com/momentum. We'll get you to the Scope app and you can use that code and save $50. It's an awesome thing. You also get a couple free keywords to use. And I would absolutely suggest you try it and give it a shot. Private message me again. If you want more information, I can do that for you. And finally, Solutions for E-commerce. That's Karen Locker's group. You hear me talk a lot about her because I believe in her. She created some private label listings. Well, not her, somebody on her team did, and they did it wrong. They uploaded, I think it was the wrong pictures, right? And it's like, oh, I caught it, because they sent me a thing saying, hey, here it is, check it out. I'm like, whoa. Rather than freak out, in my mind I was, message Karen, boom. 20 minutes later, it was fixed. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, how did they do that so quickly and turn it around? But that's the serious level, the service that I get from Karen. And I pay her the same as everybody else. Yeah, she pays me as a sponsor, but I pay her the same fees as you do. You save $50 if you buy it through my podcast. So it's solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum. Save $50, but she's also going to do an inventory health report for you. That's very valuable. Let's look at your inventory and see why it's not right. What do you need to get rid of? Save some fees and go all in. Use that money to help build a really strong Q4. Q4 is here, and man, I'm so excited about this.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 233, Ed Rosenberg. You know, you've probably seen Ed's name around a lot. I mean, it just seems to be out there. Why? Because a lot of people are getting suspended. And we get to that, you know, but there's a story behind Ed and how he became an expert at helping people get unsuspended, because guess what? He was too. And so he tells that story. How he gets there, though, he's a computer nerd. He's a guy who spent his life in the computer world and figured that stuff out and was able to bring it to this e-commerce world early on, and have a lot of success. That just doesn't happen by accident. There's a smart dude here. It's a great interview. Really, really good advice. He will scare you a little bit. I'm just going to warn you. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. Very excited about today's guest, as he is almost impossible to get a hold of because he's so busy doing interviews or helping sellers, quite honestly. Ed Rosenberg. Welcome, Ed.
Hi, Stephen. Thank you very much, and I appreciate you having me, and I'm sorry it was a little bit difficult to get a hold of me.
Well, you know, both of us are busy. As we speak, as we're recording this, my wife went down, our third grandchild is being born, and so my plan was, it was scheduled for Wednesday, so I was going to be off on Wednesday and, you know, do all that, and God has his own plan, and things happen. So we're very fortunate there, and so able to get this in real quick before I start traveling. So I really do appreciate it. So Ed Rosenberg are you a seller?
Yeah, I've been selling for 20 years online.
20 years. No kidding. I mean, what did you do prior to that?
I was a computer programmer.
Oh, no. You're a nerd. You're a nerd. But you're a nerd from way back. I mean, you were like the real nerd.
Yeah, and actually for the I'm only selling full time like I think 11 years. Actually, I was a computer programmer, and those days, like 15 years ago, in order to sell on eBay, you had to sort of be like technical. Like today, my kids, it's two snap and the item's on eBay.
Right off their phone. Right, they don't even need another device. It's also one handed. They can actually do it. Right.
Yeah. So today, those days, people would come to like a programmer, a technical guy, who would help you list it. So I was originally a programmer, and actually what happened, believe it or not, by 9/11, I was a consultant to Morgan Stanley.
Oh, wow.
And I worked in downtown Brooklyn and as a consultant, and we saw those towers, you know, unfortunately go down in front of my eyes. And Morgan Stanley and all the companies, they couldn't really get rid of employees because, you know, how would that look? There was a terrorist attack and, you know, they're getting rid of employees, so what they did, but they had to cut costs and they needed the space, so they got rid of all the consultants.
Yeah, nobody notices that, right? Nobody, you know, hey, oh, we just stopped some contract, but we saved our employees, right?
Right.
And in that world, a contractor, I mean, you're only not an employee in the legal term. I mean, you're basically, you know, you're going to work with the same group of people, right? You're doing the same work week in, week, sometimes for years, right? The same group.
Yeah, I was there. I was in Morgan Stanley for a few years, but you know, I got more, and you know, I wasn't upset at them.
No, I get it. Yeah. Okay.
And, yeah, and so I don't know if your listeners remember what was going on then, but like with the next, like right before 9/11, like the years before, it was the internet boom, and like anybody who said the word internet or computer was getting a job for like $200,000. After 9/11, maybe it was because 9/11 and because technology got good enough that people started doing things overseas, being a programmer in one of these companies were not as lucrative. So I started on the side selling on more aggressively, even though I was doing it before on Amazon and eBay. And eventually when I bounced around after I couldn't get any good jobs, I just decided to just do this full time. And that's what I was doing.
So I would think that, you know, that would have been, what, 2001? 2000? No, it couldn't have been. 2000 and what year would it have been?
Yeah, so I would say around then.
Okay, so right around then. And so you would have had the Y2K that would have ended, right? And so all those guys, I remember paying stay-on bonuses, paying six-month bonus just to stay with the company during Y2K, right? There was huge demand for all that stuff, and it continued for a while. But then I remember everybody was started outsourcing because, you know, maybe it was 9/11, maybe one of those things. It was like, hey, you can't have all your eggs in a basket. And then all of a sudden, a lot of jobs went overseas. So I wonder if that's part of the thing that affected you in the tech world specifically. All of a sudden, it was like, I mean, I had friends who worked for IBM, and man, half of it was India. You know, I mean, it was just huge motions there. And that continued for a while. What were you selling? Were you selling computer-related stuff or stuff from some other way?
Right. So initially, I was just selling like retail arbitrage, basically.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
how did you learn that?
Well, you know, those days, you know, it seemed like there was such a market for, there were so many buyers compared to so few sellers.
Right.
That literally anything you threw up there, it didn't have to be listed right, didn't have to optimize it. Anything you threw up there literally would sell.
And because you had people coming to you for some of those services, you saw what they were selling, and it was like a light bulb, like, duh, I can do this. I mean, is that part of it?
Yeah, that was part of it. Or people would just, it wasn't like people would say, here's some inventory and you can keep 10% of it. They would just sell it to me.
Oh, okay. So you were buying it in volume, like, oh, I'll do the hard work for you. I'll take one for the team. And then you were able to do it yourself.
Yeah. And then, you know, like, it sounds like a small thing, but it wasn't so easy. They didn't have click and ship. They didn't have posting. People didn't have seller accounts. So you added value if you knew how to do it.
Right. And everything you listed would sell, right? I mean, generally. I mean, because you couldn't. I mean, it's the baseball cards. Baseball cards were hot until they were available, right? They were such, you know, supply and demand. You couldn't get them. Now, right. You know, once the internet comes along, you can get them anywhere. Everybody has them right mm-hmm. now outside of your couple radius block.
Exactly right.
Okay, so you decide to start selling because you're not finding a job adequate. And it was a financial. You were looking for the big money, the big back, you know, whatever it was, right? And you didn't get it, so you decided to start selling. But it wasn't a full-time selling? Was it just to supplement your income at that point too?
Right, yeah. So initially I was looking for a job or getting like part-time gigs. And then I switched, and then part time I was doing selling online, and as time went on, it was just like 100%. And I sort of had enough programming, you know, you're competing with people, with these geniuses from like India and Russia. It became very, very competitive. So I enjoyed more working for myself and selling my own items.
Did, when you were a consultant, were you independently working? I would assume in your programming, it's a lot of independent, right? You know, put your headphones on, do whatever you're going to do. Was there a lot of oversight, or were you kind of your own, like a lone wolf kind of person?
No, there was oversight. Like when you're working for these big companies, you know, they're paying, you know, a few hundred bucks an hour. So they're paying you for a project. So no, there is oversight. It's not like there's a boss on top of you yelling at you every day, but there is definitely the status reports, the checking in, is you coming, you're not coming. You're not really doing your own schedule, like running your own business.
Well, looking back, and be honest, which is more attractive to you, where you were paid as a high-end consultant, you know, and doing a project, completing it, getting that satisfaction of meeting that customer, you know, understanding what they want and actually giving it to them and delivering it, or being an independent business person with all the ups and the downs, right? Because it is ups and downs every minute of every day, just about. Which one's more attractive to you, looking back?
Yeah, to me, there's no question it's being an independent businessman, no question whatsoever.
So even though there was rewards for helping others and satisfying them, it doesn't, it pales in comparison to just being free.
Yeah, I mean, when you're working for like a big company like Morgan Stanley, work for Bell Atlantic, you don't really get that satisfaction.
Okay.
I would say of you helping someone. You know, like I could have disappeared one day off the face of the earth. You know,
nobody would know, right?
No.
Yeah, and nobody came down and said, "Hey, man, that was a mean ass line of code you wrote there. That was awesome," right? Nobody does that, right? Okay, so I get it. Okay, so you start selling and you have a little success or a lot of success?
Yeah, I would say I did very well. I started switching. I switched over to, I jumped around industries. At one point I was selling like Lexmark and Minolta and HP printers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I, you know, I did that for like a couple of years, and then I started doing electronics.
And those are easy, right? There's no returns. Those, you know, everybody.
No, those are very hard.
They are very hard, and it's not a very competitive niche, right? I mean, that's not
very competitive.
It really is, and it's still to this day. Isn't that fascinating? How competitive it still is to this day. That's one of the most competitive categories.
Yeah, I would agree. And then what happened was I started thinking that I was doing like car audio, and it just became so saturated, and it was becoming, I think a little bit had to do with it, was as eBay and Amazon made it easier and easier to list. So like every Joe Schmo said to himself, you know, hey, like why can't I do the same thing as he could do?
And they could.
and they could. And no, but it wasn't like that initially.
Right.
It was, so there was sort of that transition. And once that transition happened, like I just started thinking that it's so easy to get the inventory and sell it. Like it's just going to get harder and harder to make a profit. So at that point, I specialized and I created my own private label line of motorcycle audio accessories.
And this is how long ago?
This is around 7 years ago, I would say.
7 years ago. So you saw the light, you saw the things were going to change, and I'm sure they were, but I mean, you know, look forward 7 years to what they are now. But you started in private label way back. I mean, and back then, private label, I mean, it's not that it's not hard. I don't want to downplay that because it is hard. But it was hard, right? I mean, you didn't have, there was no Alibaba to speak of at this level, right? There was none of this stuff. You couldn't. you know, call on Skype to your Chinese vendors and just send the money through PayPal. I don't know. Could you do PayPal? Probably not, right?
It was risky. I mean, I never lost money, but every time I sent that wire, I was like wondering if anything would actually.
Who is this over there, and are they real? But you couldn't. You didn't have access to them. Like, you didn't know if they really were a manufacturer, right? You didn't know that. Everybody says they are, but they're not. Lots of them are distributors, right? Or they represent others. Then you had no way to know. I mean, who would you talk to? I mean, were there agents in China you could use?
No, I didn't. I never really used agents. I just contacted, I think Alibaba was starting, or, you know, however I found them. And I've been using like the same three or four suppliers since I started, and I never had like a problem with like the goods didn't show up.
Okay, and so that helps. So I mean, today, do you still deal with either any of those suppliers?
Yeah, I still do.
Really?
Yeah, I actually still do. And what happened was, so you know, I was doing really well, and you know, the profit. For private label, if you do it right, it's really high. So I was doing great, and 2 years ago, my Amazon account got suspended.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, now it wasn't a huge account. It was around $200,000 a month, mm-hmm. which is a lot for private label.
So, sure, it is.
Yeah, so it's not a lot for certain industries, but for private label, you know, if your profit is, you know, pretty good, that's great money. And, you know, like everyone else, I was just paralyzed. And, like, I couldn't believe that Amazon would just have the power like that to just turn off your life. It's incredible, the power they have. It's almost like 10 armies.
Well, let's stop a second there, because I think that's a good point to pause for a second. We did, in the pre-interview talk, we talked about this, is that, you know, when you've been selling for so long, there's a belief like, hey, that won't happen to me. They know me. I mean, you know. They knew Ed. Ed's been around for, that's the guy. He's the guy. We've been with him. But
right.
When it becomes larger, right, the larger these companies become, the less personal it becomes, right? I've heard from some people say that, you know, Jeff Bezos used to go to meetups. I mean, could you imagine, right? I mean, can you actually imagine that? But in today's day and age, it's you know, there's 55 layers between him and you. Now, mm-hmm. right? And so that personal stuff is gone. There is nothing personal, right? It purely is business, computerized business, I would say, right? Is that fair?
Yeah, that's very fair. Everything in Amazon, and I was actually there a few weeks ago, everything in Amazon is built for scale. So, and that's good for certain things.
Well, yeah, but that's not good. I mean, wait, say that again. So everything they have is built for scale. Does that mean a small seller can get lost?
Yeah, it does mean that. And I've seen, no, it also means that great contradictions happen. So, for example, it's not so much a contradiction, but, you know, I was involved in a $50 million account that got suspended for confirming shipments before they actually shipped. And, you know, of course, it's a very easy reinstatement. But my point is, if they wouldn't have known how to do it, and, you know, they would have just gotten frustrated, this company with 100 employees would have never gotten reinstated.
Okay, so they were confirming shipments, so meaning that they got an order in, they would process it, market shipped, and move it out as fast as they can. The I Love Lucy with the chocolates coming down the line. They got to keep it moving, right? Keep the machine moving,
yeah.
Right?
No, they, according to the terms of service, they're not allowed to like come in Sunday, update the tracking, and only ship it the next day. You have to the day you update the tracking has to be the same day that the item gets shipped.
And update the tracking. That's the final. That's when you put that tracking number in there, right? When you click postage, if you use theirs or if you use your own or whatever, when you put that in there, that's saying, hey, here's your product. It's now into the stream, whatever UPS or FedEx or USPS, right? That piece,
right,
that's the step.
Exactly. But if it didn't actually ship and it only went the next day, let's say you came in on Sunday to, you know, get the shipments ready, and you posted it as shipping on Sunday. You, there's an option where you can post it shipping Monday, but if you posted it as shipping as Sunday, no big deal because the customer gets it at the same time. It can happen once in your life, or it can also happen that UPS doesn't come once in your life. And something like that happens, Amazon will suspend, and that's just one of literally
Right.
hundreds of examples.
But I don't want to lose that because somebody's going to say, wait, beat that down one more time, Steve. So if you would have switched it to Monday, then you're okay because you did, I mean, assuming that it got picked up or you delivered it, right? That meets the terms of, you could still process it on Sunday. However, you just got to say it's starting on Monday, correct?
Yeah, because
Okay.
exactly, because they say the customer gets like stressed out by
Right.
thinking it ships Sunday, and then he checks his tracking and nothing happens.
So why don't they, I mean, and I guess this is the duh question, right? And this is duh, Steve. But why don't they warn you and say, Ed, dude, you can't do that. You said Sunday, and here's an infraction. You got a demerit. Here's the demerit system, right? You need to get your act together. We're going to send you back to, shipping school or something like that. I mean, is it the scale issue, period? I mean, that's it.
Okay, so to be fair to Amazon, they do warn you,
Oh, okay.
but they would never like pick up the phone and like speak to you.
Okay, they would say, Ed, come on, buddy. I
Yeah.
know, you're having a rough weekend, but no. All right. So it's just,
Yes.
what do they do? They send you a notification? Is that one of those little red, that when that little red thing shows up in the top left-hand corner? That
Yeah.
ever, okay. Okay. So you get that and you got to take that serious.
Yes,
Okay.
very serious.
Okay. All right. So you're suspended. Your life, I mean, that relationship, I mean, does it feel like, I mean, when you felt that, I mean, did you almost walk away like, oh my God? I mean, was your life over as you knew it? I mean, I don't know how mature you were at that time, but I would be emotional, I would assume.
Yeah.
Especially at that point, not many people were suspended, right? Not like they are now.
No, first of all, I knew I was a great seller.
Okay.
And, the messaging for the complaints, like one of the items was I got a used sold as new complaint, and I think I sold like 20,000. I
Okay, so
had like
out of
four.
one out of 20,000. Yeah. Wow.
And like you don't really know what to do. And I was like very upset, and like everyone's upset. But I decided that. And so first, I got myself back.
Okay. By yourself.
And yeah, no, I actually hired one of these like template appeals
Okay. You hired one of
services.
the companies that are out there that have a very organized, address the, I know I did wrong. Here's what I'm doing. Here's my plan of action, that whole thing.
Yeah, it was very different then. They didn't have rights owners, and related accounts was less of an issue. And they weren't like reimbursement suspensions. There were less things. It was less complex then. It was
Okay.
more like you messed up and fix it.
Okay.
But I remember at the time I was like, well, the first thing I realized was that the only reason why this is happening is because sellers are not communicating. So, they didn't really have these Facebook groups and stuff.
So wait, what does that mean? Sellers aren't communicating. You think that it's just you. Is that what you meant by that? Is that you're on an island, you're isolated, you don't know? Is that what you meant?
I don't know. But first of all, I don't know how to get out of it.
Okay.
That week, like I have no idea. There's no clear path how to get out of it.
'Cause you felt like a loser too, right? You're probably embarrassed to say it.
Exactly. And you can't tell your everyone who you owe that I'm
Yeah,
suspended, then they
right.
start thinking you're a
That's not
crook.
popular. Yeah, I don't think that would be popular. Okay.
And so like I was trying to get like information from other sellers, and it wasn't very efficient. Like, what do? You call up, hey, maybe you can help me, I got this message. And when you're dealing with each person individually, each one knows a little, just a few crumbs, and you got to find like the one or two people that had exactly that issue.
Yeah, because the issue is isolated, right? It's not like they're the same issues. There are, as you said, how many hundreds of reasons you could be suspended. And so each one probably are similar, but they're different too.
It's not a type of thing you can just Google and find the answer. You have to know exactly what to do, what Amazon wants to hear, and then you're like scared. You do tell them this, you don't tell them that. There's like a certain fear which people have of seller performance,
Oh,
some
yeah.
way. So I just opened up a WhatsApp group just me and like the few, right after I got reinstated, me and a few people who I knew selling on Amazon, like relatives. And we, I just started, you know, I just figured a way that we can all throw out our issues and we can help each other.
In a safe way.
Everything, you know, at no point were we ever, you know, we want to be compliant with Amazon. We just don't know how.
Right.
It wasn't like a way to like beat the system. Initially, I think people thought we were like getting together, like how to outsmart Amazon. That was, of course, never the intention. So as you know, and all of a sudden the group started getting like, you know, the value in the group was priceless, and more people heard about it, and I kept adding. In those days, WhatsApp had a limit of 100 people. So once it hit 100, somebody told me about Telegram. And what Telegram is, it's an app similar to WhatsApp, but it's much more advanced than it has. You can have super groups of like 10,000 people. It was like a forum. And, you know, people literally from all over the world heard about it, and they were joining that group, and they started emailing me about suspensions.
Well,
So I myself,
let me ask you something there, because I think that that's important. Did you have any perspective on how large of an issue this was? I mean, this was personal for you. I mean, you felt isolated, alone on an island, right? Because as we said, nobody's talking about it, right? Because that's a, you know, the red, what's that thing around the neck? The scarlet letter, right? You're wearing the scarlet letter. And so, did you ever have a clue that it is as large of an issue as it is?
Actually, I as much as I knew that it was huge, it was only like a fraction of what I thought, because it's not just suspensions. I came across one person that lost $3 million of inventory.
Jesus.
I mean, right now as we speak, I know of dozens of people who are missing inventory in Amazon over, you know, in the millions of dollars.
And it's happening at every shipment right now for whatever reason. And it seems to be with this box level detail, seems to be around the time something's changed, right? Something is definitely afoot. Are you.
No, I don't know if it's, you know, I just think, you know, it's such a big operation and there's so many moving parts. You know, a few million dollars of missing
Yeah,
inventory,
nothing. Yeah.
nothing.
Right.
But you know, this guy was texting me this morning. He's out 700 grand.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So and each one, each person individually speaking to Amazon is like a toothpick going up against Godzilla.
Right. They're like, yeah, I've got bigger things to deal with. I remember I did an interview and the guy was like, they don't want to even talk unless it's a $3 billion deal. They're not really interested in these saving $30 million. It was like, that's really great, but no thanks. We want 3 billion, you know? And so that's real, right? I mean, that's hard. But all right, I'm gonna do this because I gotta collect my thoughts because that just you just stunned me with that. You know, a guy messages today, and this is real. 700 G's. How, I mean, you want to talk about losing profit. I mean, that's losing cost of goods. I mean, that's like, that's real pain. He's got to pay that, right? I mean, that's real money out of his pocket. Very, very difficult to recover from. So, all right, I want to pause. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. A couple more sponsors I want to talk about today. GoDaddy, that is my domain. That's where I buy all my domains. And I was just thinking about this. As I was recording this, I'm like, I wonder if I can get my 30% savings on the stuff that I already bought. Nah, I bet you not. Hey, they got a deal right now, 30% off of what you're gonna buy. All right, so try GoDaddy.com/momentum. Try GoDaddy.com/momentum and get domains. I am a domain buyer. I am. I must admit, if I have a big idea, I check to see if the domain's available. And so I go to GoDaddy, pop it in, and up comes whether it's there or not. Sometimes it's $24,000 to buy it, but I don't buy those. Anyway, I like to check it. And if I have a good idea, I'll buy that domain. And if you could save 30%, awesome, save it. Try GoDaddy.com/momentum. Second sponsor in this segment is Grasshopper. If you've been thinking about becoming a little more professional business, I see a lot of people doing Shopify stores now. That means they're going to have customer service. Right now, instead of just paying Amazon, they're going to have to start dealing with that. Or God forbid you're selling on Walmart, you absolutely have to have a customer service plan. Well, guess what? Sound professional without carrying a second cell phone. put in Grasshopper as an app on your phone. It allows you to add a bunch of extensions. One, you know, press one for customer service, two for sales, that kind of thing. Allows you to forward it to anyone. So you can forward it certain hours of the day to your team overseas to help answer those questions. It's an awesome thing. You're going to become professional, okay? So try grasshopper.com/momentum. Try grasshopper.com/momentum and see how much money you're going to save. $50 off if you sign up through that link. Let's get back into the podcast.
Okay, he really did shake me with this. That 700G scared me to death because I think about it in terms of our business. What would you do? That could be your whole profit for the year and, you know, level to your level. But I mean, just think about that. It's gone. Or that was the cost of health insurance increases. Or, hey, we were going to take some extra time and do whatever. And now that's gone. Or we were going to buy a piece of capital, some of capital for the business, some piece of equipment. That's gone. That's some scary stuff. You know, I think about Dave Ramsey, who always says that, you know, you should have a emergency fund for your business. Do you have that? Do you have money set aside that's kind of an untouchable, that it's a, hey, this is to get us through the tough times because it might rain fund? Most people don't, because we all put it back in inventory. And I get it. When you're trying to grow, it's so hard. That's why this cash flow is so critical in this business. But I think he scares you, but it's real. And I think the stories will give you perspective. We talked about it after we finished recording. And it's like that perspective is what I hope you get from this, is that this happens to real good people with good, solid business practices, and stuff still goes wrong. And so control what you can control and get real serious about it, but get some perspective. So let's get into the podcast. All right, we're back and we're talking with Ed Rosenberg. And man, oh man, he just shook me on that last part of the conversation because, you know, when I lose, you know, and it's happened, I mean, I'm not exaggerating. I look back at the, because I saw somebody posting about it, seems to be happening very frequently lately, two or three or four items of every shipment sending in or out of every box is missing. And I'm like, I mean, I know how to count. I went to accounting school, for God's sake. I better know how to account. And there's definitely something that seems to be triggering something. There's definitely something different. And maybe it is a growing pain. But then again, I look back and I saw a zillion shipments where they'd been perfect. And so I think to myself, you know, maybe it is me. And I start to doubt myself, thinking, oh man, we got to be more careful, you know, and that. But okay, so you started to see different problems. And that, so the fraction that you thought it was, obviously was, I mean, would it be 100 times bigger? I mean, I'm just trying to get perspective before the other problems, just in the suspension side.
Yeah, just in the suspension side, I would say it was like, people are like shivering and fearful for being suspended. And maybe it's a little bit of exaggeration, but it's like hearing they got cancer.
Right.
I mean, it's life and death. Because
in some cases, right, it is, right? I imagine that there have been companies that have gone out of business because of this. If somebody freezes your inventory or it's gone, right? How do you recover from that if you don't have the depth of cash flow, right?
It's right. And you know, Amazon does have they have something called arbitration. Mm-hmm. Which in the contract of Amazon, in the agreement, so they say that if there's some kind of disagreement, dispute, then you go to arbitration. So, you know, arbitration is a little easier than just, someone in Amazon sending you an email. You're dealing with a normal person who's rational. And I myself have never represented anybody in arbitration, but I know there is that option. But part of the problem is it takes a few months.
Right.
Until you get there, and by the time that happens, I've noticed it's the larger companies which suffer more, because if you're a small shop, you know, it's three people, so, you know, if you're closed down for 2 months, you may be able to weather it, but if you have 80 employees and you're paying health insurance and all of that, you cannot survive.
You can't survive, and you risk losing your talent, right? I mean, every business, especially when you start to scale, there's talent. And if you lose that talent, you'll never get that depth of knowledge. I always call it, it's gone. And if they leave, and they're gone forever in a lot of cases, because they're not, you know, you can only say so many times, look, I'm working with them. They're trying. They don't understand. This is my, I got to feed my kids, or I got to pay for my kids' college, right? Yeah. That's hard. Ooh. So you're dealing, are you dealing with smaller sellers too? And I guess we should say this. And Ed's not going to pitch his stuff, but I'll say it. Ed has a program. What's the company's name?
Right. So I right. So initially we started this group, and you know, I just want to clarify. I call it ASGTG, but initially when I started this, and for like a year, it was just, you know, I was still running my business, which was getting harder and harder because I was spending so much time, like moderating the groups and like helping people. It was just like a, you know, pro bono. Everything was on the house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but like happens all the time, you know, after a while, it was like consuming 60 hours a week. And, you know, there's no way I can continue doing it. And people were more than happy to pay it. That was not a problem, getting money from people. So after a while, people would hire me as, you know, well, actually, let me go back. Initially, I had like all kinds of, I reached out to the top people who do suspensions. And I sort of like introduced them, and I sort of like gave them the case, and you know, I would see who was available. But as time went on, I learned so much about the process that people started asking me if I could just do it. And it was becoming actually easier just doing it myself instead of chasing down some of these guys. So as time went on, you know, I started doing it, and I had tons of success. And
well, let me ask you that too. So when you start to see a pattern, right? So, I mean, you know, if there's an inauthentic claim, if there's a shipping too early claim, right? Or whatever. Generally, I mean, I'm sure there's little nuances for each one and little wacky circumstances, but generally you start to develop a, here's how we handle this. Okay, guys, let's go through this. And then what works, great. And what doesn't work, you tweak. And then you get it to work. And it's like, okay, now we modified this process. You start to build these plans, I guess. I don't really have a better, or models, maybe it's a better term, right, for people to visualize. Is that what was starting to happen for you? Because you were seeing similar things and you were able to say, okay, yeah, I've seen that before. Here's how we tackle that.
Yeah. Well, that is, you know, after a while, there's only so many ways Amazon could ask for different pieces of information. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and after a while, the same type of suspensions would happen again and again. But they have something called Amazon, like if they sense that it was a generic plan of action.
Oh, then, okay.
Yeah. So then they're not stupid. Like that's why these, you know, they have, if you Google like suspensions, there are people doing it for like $200 a suspension. And, you know, it's probably, you know, like somebody contacted me recently, he lost $3 million in sales by the time he contacted me, $100,000 a day.
Jesus.
And you know, they don't want Amazon something like a cookie cutter plan, and it's more than just a plan. It's a lot of times it's the invoices, a lot of times it's they want you to remove certain products. You know, it's more than just like, you know, work once, so just send the same thing over and over. They specifically want, like, almost like you have to be creative. They want you to really find the root cause of the issue and then fix it. And it can't be the same, you know, the same thing for someone else. It's not going to work.
Well, let's talk about that, for example, because I think that's a good place to pause. They want the root cause. So right now, I think the number one thing that I've been seeing out there people getting suspended for is people are saying, hey, these are counterfeit, right? They're inauthentic, right? Is that, am I correct when I say that? At least in the small seller world that I'm seeing.
Inauthentic, and there's something else called rights owner complaints.
Okay, so rights owner is the new one because of brands, right? I mean, I was just at a trade show, and the Amazon rep was literally hovering over my shoulder trying to get to the same wholesale company we were. And they were right there getting the same account, right? We battling back and forth. Literally, it was a battle. I mean, it was weird. Anyway, it's so, if they get the rights and they're making their pitch, hey, you only need to deal with us, blah, 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 right? That whole thing. All the other sellers that were buying their stuff at, give a bad example, TJ Maxx or Target or Kmart, that right there is a root of a problem, right?
Yes. Yes and no. See, rights owner is very misunderstood.
Okay.
So what rights owner basically means is that the owner of the brand says that by you selling an item, you're violating their trademark. Now, even if you're not a lawyer, you know that how do you violate someone's trademark? If I, for example, have a T-shirt and I use a Nike swoosh, which Nike's not getting paid for, so I'm using their.
That's a violation.
That's a clear violation.
Makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, if I go to Walmart and I pick up a Sony camera and I sell the exact Sony camera on Amazon, how am I violating a trademark? Question is, so the answer is, and as far as I know, if you go to any judge, you're not.
Right.
Because it's a free country. And
you bought it, you're allowed to sell it.
Yeah, you bought it, and I'm allowed to sell it. But they try to say, these lawyers, they figure out that because there's no warranty, or there's something different, let's say there's an 800 number, or there's something different which you don't get from buying it from Walmart as opposed to from buying it from me, because of that, you're cheapening the trademark. Now, in reality, if I would take that item and in front of my house, put up a table and start selling the item, they're not going to care less. They're just trying to get me off Amazon. And they're using this tool to try to get me off Amazon.
And why do they want you off of Amazon?
For multiple reasons. Sometimes there are some companies that sign exclusives. And when you sign an exclusive, so the company that signed the exclusive, and if Sony signs an exclusive with me, then I'm the only one allowed to sell this item on Amazon. And all of a sudden you pop up. So I'm going to say you're violating you're violating Sony's trademark.
Because those are your sales, right? That's your profit. Yeah. That's not going, and you're never going to see a dime of it. Sony's happy because they're still selling it, but you're not.
Yeah, sometimes Sony's not happy either because I may be selling it for too little.
Oh, okay.
And I'm going to read you, if you Google Amazon rights owner infringement, I'm going to read you directly from the page in which everybody files infringements. Here it goes. Amazon respects a manufacturer's right to enter into exclusive distribution agreements for its products. However, violations of such agreements do not constitute intellectual property rights infringement, as the enforcement of these agreements is a matter between the manufacturer and the retailers. It would not be appropriate for Amazon to assist in enforcement activities, which means that saying that you can't sell it and she could sell it is not a trademark violation.
So when someone asserts that at you, you have that defense. And right. It sounds like Amazon will support that defense.
Right. So now the last few months, because I think what happened was initially everyone was filing rights owners and everybody just said, oh, well, and they can't sell it on Amazon. But then it hurt. Amazon cares about the buyer, and the buyer would just go to eBay. Me as a buyer, I would just buy it on eBay if I can get the same item for cheaper. So Amazon sort of like reversed. This was always the rule on Amazon, but they sort of, the implementation was reversed. And if a company files an infringement complaint saying you don't have a right to sell it, if you send an invoice and you email Amazon, you tell them that this company is enforcing selective distribution as a trademark, in almost 70% of the cases that I've seen, maybe more, you'll end up getting the ASIN back.
So that phrase selective, right, that term means something, right? They know, right, whoever that is who's reviewing that saying, yeah, they're right, right? And 70% of the time.
Yeah, you know, you have to bring proof. You see, because these lawyers, they're smart. They know that you know, just because I don't have a right to sell it, or they say I don't have a right to sell it, that's not a trademark violation. So what they do is they file these trademark complaints, and they don't tell Amazon the reason why they're filing these complaints is because I'm not authorized to sell. Because if they would, then Amazon would say that's not a trademark violation. They keep it sort of like vague, and then Amazon says you two fight it out and let me know who wins.
Right, because again, we're back to scale, right? You're talking gazillions of sellers and lots of vendors or manufacturers, right? Who's, you know, he said, she said, you guys fight it out and come back to us.
Right, and meanwhile, if you're, unless you have millions of dollars, you're not going to take Daniel Wellington, who's known to do it a lot. You're not going to take them to court. So they're sort of hedging that no one's ever going to take them to court. And there's more than that. Again, I'm not a lawyer, but as far as I know, all you need is sort of like good faith belief that somebody's violating your trademark. So they could just file the claim. They could say, oh, we thought that Ed was violating his trademark because he's selling it too cheap. We don't recognize him. And when he gets to court, after I spend millions of dollars and I'm out of Amazon, they'll say, oops, okay, I apologize.
Yeah, my mistake. Yeah, sorry about that, but you're out. I mean, you see that, I think back to the big movies, that was one of the big plays. We'll just tie him up in court for so long, he won't know what hit him. Eventually, he'll give up. I mean, that's in essence what you're describing, right? I mean, it really is on a smaller scale.
Yeah, so that's why, anybody that's listening, if you get a rights owner complaint, as long as you have proper proof that you bought the item from a legitimate store, even if it's receipts, I would say in at least 70% of the cases, and you just write to Amazon, you take a picture of the item, you show the receipts or the invoices, and you let them know that it's a legitimate item, you're unsure how a trademark is being violated. More often than not, it'll get overturned. But what happens if you don't do that? So then all of a sudden, the Amazon algorithm says this guy has four trademark complaints against him. They're not looking at the details that they're bogus complaints. They just see four trademark complaints against the seller. They'll suspend you.
Smoke, there's fire, right? That must be, right? That's it. Yeah. They don't go back and say, but Ed, let me call him. Let me call Ed. I saw that on Ed made the list. Let me call him. Hey, Ed, what's the deal, man? Come on, man. No. It's
No. No.
like you said, an algorithm now that's making the decision, right? And it's putting weight. And you made this statement earlier, and I want to make sure I'm clear on this. The larger seller, is it because they just have so much higher volume? Therefore, they're going to have, if there's one inauthentic claim or whatever it is, rights owner thing, every, 10,000 sale, just because they sold, 50,000 things today, they're likely to have more of them than me who sells 10,000 a year, right? Is that
No,
reasonable?
I do think they it's the inauthentics for the suspensions. It's a percentage. So if you get however the percentage is, they also weigh high priority brands differently. So for example, if you never got a rights owner complaint and you get one for Apple, you'll probably be suspended.
That's a serious deal.
Yeah.
I've noticed that in the last 2 weeks, I guess it's been, just little comments I've seen in a bunch of groups that I'm in. Nike seems to be one that seems to be popping up. It seems pretty prevalent right now.
Yeah, Nike does it. Now, a lot of times, like when you contact Nike, because there's two things to do by a rights owner. There's one, Amazon says if it's untrue, let us know and give evidence, we'll overturn it. And people like don't use that avenue enough.
Which
People
is
just say,
basically what you said. Show me the receipt. Show me a picture of it. Say these are legit. I bought it from a real source. Here you go.
yeah, they're just trying to enforce selective
Okay.
distribution,
And so,
which is
right, using
right.
that phrase, and then boom, sending that in. As you said, 70% of the time, that'll just go away.
Yes.
Okay. And what's the second one?
Okay, now the second option is they say, and this has been around for a while, they tell the rights owner, they tell the seller, here's the contact information of the rights owner. Contact them and let us know once it's resolved. Once it's resolved, if the rights owner sends an email that the issue has been worked out and the complaint has been retracted, so then the complaint goes off your account.
Now,
Now,
so that's
now
usually going to a lawyer, right? They don't usually say, hey, here's Phil Knight's personal email, right? It's usually some law firm with about 50 names in it. And then you, the little seller, has you're not intimidated at all to send them a note saying, hey, I bought your stuff. I just want to sell it, right? That's pretty
Right.
scary.
Yeah, it is, and there are lawyers for sellers that do this, which helps, because what the lawyers do is you tell the other lawyers that first of all, there is no trademark, and here's the proof. But if you don't retract the complaint, especially if I'm not going to list your item again, then I'm going to hold you liable for my $25,000 a day in sales, which I'm losing because. So normally when they hear that gives them something to lose. But I've had people on the, because I deal a lot with the rights owners. I've had rights owners, like, you know, we did everything they wanted. We signed an agreement that we'll never sell it, you know, whatever. And then I'm like, send a stinking email so this guy can get reinstated. And the guy would be like, yeah, I'll get back, you know, I'm on vacation, I'll get back next week. Yeah, so it's very frustrating because when that happens, you're at the mercy of someone who couldn't care less about you.
Right, and so the only way you do it was when you have hand, right? So that threat of, hey, you're going to get trouble, you know, damages, whatever. I'm going to get damages, and I want blah, 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 blah. That can get people moving.
Yeah, but that has its limitations because when you're selling on Amazon, every day is you're bleeding cash. Hmm. You have long-term storage, and these guys, and like that process, you know, could take weeks and weeks.
So the name of your company is what, Ed?
But I mean, it's, you know, the name of, like, you know, I would say the organization, really, because it's more like
But you have a company,
yeah,
that you help people get reinstated. I mean, people are like, hey, you know, Steve, what is the deal? This is another option if you're looking for somebody to help you get reinstated. Ed has a service, right? You charge for, I assume, it's not free anymore.
No,
your wife would like some money coming home, right? That's fine, not free. But so you have a company or a group that people can reach out to. What's the name of it?
It's ASGTG.
Okay. Okay. Amazon Sellers Group. What does it stand for? What did it
say?
Telegram. Oh, because that's what it was. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now I get it. All right. I'm just trying to understand it. Okay. And so that was the WhatsApp that evolved to that. How many people are in the group help sellers?
Well, it's, you know, now it's all over. I don't know if you've seen me on Facebook. There's like 7,000 people in that group. There's a group on LinkedIn. You know, it's you know, and on top of that, I also, like, what I do is, because I'm on these groups all day, I take the cream, the best stuff, and I send out a blog post, which I think is followed by, you know, many, many thousands of people, including Amazon, of the most pressing things which Amazon is after. And
that's free. I mean, just so people know, because I'm in the group, it's all free, and I get your newsletter, which is, you know, like, hey, you know, and it seems to be very current. I don't know. I mean, maybe, I don't, like you say, you're cherry picking, but I mean, there was something that came out. I'd got an email from Amazon, and you were already addressing it. And I'm thinking to myself, Jesus, how the heck did he know that? He's get the know earlier than me. But I guess it just was a timing issue whenever their server delivered it. So sometimes it's very, very current, like the same day information.
Yeah, and this information, which comes at least on the newsletter, in my opinion, can save your account because it's little pieces of information. Like, if there's a company where it's all of a sudden, you know, sending out rights owner complaints, you can lay low for a week and, you know, stuff like that.
Okay. And so you can get off the listing as best, you know, you can adjust and pull back and rethink. What's, is this going to get easier or harder? I mean, I'm sitting here thinking about this because in the last couple of weeks, I've noticed a significant number of people saying they're getting suspended. First off, it's not the red scarlet letter anymore, right? It's not, because it happens to a lot of people for something simple, like you said, putting the shipping date by mistake, which, I mean, this is really awful to say. This could be a $10 an hour employee you gave that responsibility that could literally get your multi-million dollar account shut down by not being real clear and saying, this is really important. I mean, I appreciate you coming in on Sunday, but you got to market Monday. So that is an example. Is it going to get easier or harder?
Right. So, you know, I have a relationship with some people in Amazon, and we're trying to, like they don't, you know, it's not like they're there. You know, people look at it like we're here, and then there's a big wall, and then there's like three men with sunglasses, smoking cigarettes.
It's those guys. It's that guy. The man. Yeah, the man.
It's not that. They're not mean, evil spirited people. It's just, it's so big, and like, I myself can't even grasp how big it is. Everywhere I turn, I see another like $20 million seller. And there's so many moving parts, and you know, Amazon is very capable, and this is one of the things I told them, that Amazon could put a if they could put a warehouse on the sky, they can solve this issue
mm-hmm.
as well. And I think it's more of a like a communication thing. Like, for example, one of the guys on Amazon was telling me, look at the ODR. Like, this is pretty recent, the account health dashboard. Nobody complains anymore about ODR because
right.
you just look at the data. And, you know, if you ship it late and it goes past 1%, you're going to get suspended. So it's very hard. But, you know, you're just looking at the data. The problem is more like the rights owners and the Inauthentics. They have these small teams in Amazon, and they're like drones flying over the entire Amazon, and they're like snuffing out people's lives without warning.
Well, and to be fair, they're trying to prevent frauds. They're trying to prevent counterfeits. I mean, they're trying to police, you know, the world, right? I mean, when I hear that, you know, X number of new sellers start a day, I mean, how do you manage that, right? I mean, it's like, that's unmanageable, right? It's unruly.
Right, but there's some low-hanging fruit and which they can fix. And I'm not saying they should fix everything by snap of a finger, but let's say, like, how about before you destroy $3 million of inventory, you pick up a phone?
Right, right.
And, you know, I mean, that's inhumane not to do that. And because the guy, you know, I forgot what the guy did. He didn't reply in time. Or, like, sometimes, you know, if somebody's account gets hacked, so, you know, instead of being the listing didn't change, just no one's account gets hacked. They think it got hacked.
Right.
So, you know, instead of just keeping the listings live and not dispersing the money, they'll suspend you for months. So it's certain like common sense thing which the buyer experience. I'm not saying compromise the buyer experience. Like the buyer experience isn't enhanced by destroying a guy's inventory.
Right. So is there like a penalty box? I mean, is that what you're trying? Because it sounds like it's a growth issue. Again, we're back to that scale discussion. They've scaled so large so quickly, you know, stuff has to catch up. And that's common, right? They put something in place, it's not perfect, and they eventually work the kinks out, right? That's been normal practice.
Yeah, but it's been taking like years and years. Like I heard 10 years ago that Amazon was saying that they're going to improve these processes. And like a couple of years ago, there was a woman's only meeting, and like the big announcement over there was that it's going to be more communication. Nothing happened there. So it's like they can do everything, it seems, Amazon, except this. And that's what I'm trying to hope, that instead of just, you know, talking about making things better, they actually make things better. Again, no one's saying that the buyer experience should be compromised in any way. I'll give you another example. Like in the UK, so they woke up one day and people selling perfumes, they were saying that they're not going to accept perfume invoices unless you send them invoices from European sources.
Right. I saw you had that in your newsletter. And it's like, wait a second, what? I've been buying from a U.S. manufacturer, whatever, right, under my company name forever, and I decide to say, hey, this is the most efficient use of my resource. I'm going to send some here to this country and some to this country, right? That makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, but Amazon's allowed to have those rules. I have no problem with that, but listen to this. So then sellers are getting suspended. Let's say, first of all, they didn't even announce the rule. They sent it like randomly to a few sellers. Okay, that's one thing. But besides that, any seller selling in the UK beauty, if they got an inauthentic 4 months ago before the rule was put into place, they would get a message back that the invoices are not accepted because they're not European invoices. Wow. I can't go back in the past. That was before the rule started. But because it's so big and it's so set up for scale, you know, they tell the team or whichever team is working on this that moving forward, we're only accepting European invoices. And they can't adjust, like, for common sense. And, you know, how about the sellers that have millions of dollars of inventory
right.
and the owner? It's backed by U.S., they lose it. So it's like certain things like this. If it would be if they would have some common sense, what I would say, just make an announcement and say you have 3 months to unload your inventory.
Right. Sell through your inventory, then this is the rule. Right. This is date is coming. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
There's a little tiny adjustments which literally and so right now I have a few sellers that are doing millions of dollars a year in the UK. And we're sort of at a standstill, and it's every day they're losing a fortune. It's just an impossible situation, and I can't pick up the. Well, I already spoke to people on Amazon, but it's being worked on. And they really need sort of like a, and I think this is going to happen, sort of like a seller's. Sellers like
representative, myself. A seller representative almost.
Yeah, like a team of like not just one person. People who would have this broad perspective. My suggestion was more of a communications team that when you see like these real layups, like real obvious things, and all you need is like one phone call to work it out.
Right. I thought that. I mean, there are larger sellers who get an account rep, right?
Okay, that's a very good question. So everyone I speak to is like, just you got to get me an account rep.
Right.
The problem is that Amazon works in teams. So let's say you have the infringement team or the team working on the reviews. Like when you send an email to seller performance, it's getting forwarded to different teams.
Mm-hmm.
So each team is so. Let's the infringement issues. So that's sort of like a locked box. And just like I'm emailing this locked box, hey, what's going on? The account manager is knocking. He'll probably know less than even I do. And they can't really do anything. Mm-hmm. It's just the small team dealing on this infringement issue. And the account manager is not going to help it. When sellers want their account manager, they just want some kind of a communication tool in case a suspension happens. But from Amazon's perspective, it's always like, how can you grow your business? And people don't need account managers to grow their business. They just need an account manager in case something like this happens so they can communicate and they can work it out.
Hmm. So you scared us all. All right. The world.
Now, when I started doing this, I was looking at the other consultants, and I would say, look, I hate the way he scares people.
Right, right. Now you're that guy. I'm just going to let you know, Ed, you're that guy, right? You are officially become that guy. You are your father, right? I mean, and that when they always tell you you're going to become your parents, well, you're there, buddy. Right? So it's funny, though. I mean, it's real. And so, the key piece of advice I heard you say earlier is, look, pay attention to those small things, right? Those small notifications. They're going to warn you. Take it serious. Deal with it. Second, if you can get nuggets from a group of people that are experiencing problems, make sure that your house is clean and you're not doing the same thing. If you are, stop it. And so how you do that is get information. And so, you'll give us a way to sign up for your newsletter. And I don't benefit from Ed in any way. I'm just saying that I saw some information there that came from Amazon. I swear it came from Ed before it came from Amazon. It's like he was omniscient or something, but he must have just got it before I did. Anyway, but it's true. You see those little nuggets. And if you can learn from others and not mistakes, others, their experiences, how they were interpreted by somebody and it became a mistake for them, right? Those are two key things. What's another thing that sellers can do to really, it is what it is, right? There's risk in this business, right? You're on somebody else's platform. They change the rules. And as you just gave us an example, sometimes the rules get backdated, which don't make any sense. And that's just the way it is. You got to fight through that. So you can't control that. But sellers can control some more things. Give us another one that sellers can do and need to do right now to keep themselves, because Q4 is coming, and now shutdown can be devastating.
Yeah, so I would say the most important thing is having appropriate invoices and keeping your documentation in order. Hmm. Because if you get an inauthentic complaint, they let you sell anything for years and years and years. If you get an inauthentic complaint, you have to prove we sourced those items. So if you bought them from a liquidation place, and it was cash and carry,
you're in
guy
trouble.
You're in very big trouble because they could think it's stolen.
Right. And it very well could be. Right, you bought it in good faith from a place you thought, hey, this is a legitimate company. They could have been. They could have bought it from someone who they thought was a good source, and it turns out it was stolen, right? I mean, I'm sure that that happens.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuff really doesn't fall off the back of a truck. That never really does happen. I mean, never legally happens. Stuff disappears, and then it gets through the chain, and it's never washed.
Right, exactly. And that's what they're worried about. And you have to also understand, like, you know, Amazon gets it over the heads from people like me, but they're also getting it over the heads from people like Apple complaining.
And they got a lot of lawyers.
Yeah. I mean, trust me, at least, you know, I'm not worried about, Amazon could take care of themselves, but Amazon, they're getting it over the heads from Apple saying it's a flea market. So we're telling Amazon that you're too stringent and, you know, you're holding a knife at our neck. And Apple is saying it's a flea market. And there's a little bit of truth in both. Because, if you know, we've all seen these sellers, all of a sudden they show up from China and they're selling, Peyton Manning jerseys for $2.99. And, you know, they'll have 100,000 listings. And they'll be on Amazon for 3 weeks. But the guy selling, you know, for 7 years and gets one inauthentic complaint, he'll be thrown off.
Right. That's real.
So it's sort of like, you know, I'm not saying they shouldn't police, but it seems like they got to do a better job at it.
Okay. All right. So take that stuff serious. Get your house in order. Get your documentation right. Because that's, quite frankly, the best defense you have, right? I bought this from a legitimate source. Here's my proof. Okay, and as you said, 70% of the time, that generally, and these are all generalizations, that goes away for the most part, and you can work your way through those. It's that 30% where it gets a little more complicated for whatever reason. That gets really hard. And so if someone's interested, well, first off, the ASGTG group, that's a free group on Facebook, yeah. Correct? And so they just have to request to join, and you just make sure they're real or something like that?
Yeah. I mean, I basically approve everyone, but as soon as you start spamming, you know, as long as they follow the rules.
Okay, so as long as they follow the rule. And there's free information where it's kind of a health thing. It's a little scary because you're going to see some things because Ed's that guy now. He's his father. But it's true. I mean, it's one of those things. So that's a good place. And then if someone was in need of services, where do they go?
So on that website, ASGTG.com, there's a contact.
Okay.
And they can contact me that way.
All right. So if somebody has a follow-up question and they want to ask a general question, is the best place in the ASGTG Facebook group?
Well, yeah, either there or they can email me at ed@ASGTG.com.
ASGTG.com. And I'll have that on the episode out there on the website. So I'll have that. So there's your email address. Okay. Dude, that is awesome. I really appreciate you taking the time because I know you got a lot going on. I mean, what you just described to people, I hope that gives them perspective on how hard it was for us to get together. Let alone my life is crazy busy. You're 10 times busy. You're dealing with really big, big issues. And so, man, I really appreciate you taking the time. I wish you nothing but the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Another great interview. Smart guy. Remember, send me a note if you think there's somebody whose story you'd love to hear, because I'm all about the story. You know, I mean, to me, these people are so incredible and so generous with their time, and I'm very fortunate, and I thank every one of them. Man, I hope you enjoy this as much as I did. Remember, check out my sponsors, amazingfreedom.com/retreat, Seller Labs, that Scope product. It is awesome. Use it. If you're not, you're missing it, go try it right now and save $50. Solutions for e-commerce, GoDaddy, love GoDaddy, and, you know, Grasshopper. I mean, think about scaling up to that next level business. So ecommercemomentum.com. Out on the website, I've got links to all the stuff I talked about in this episode. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.